Let Vanessa go first, so we'll hear from Vanessa first.
This is being recorded.
Everything's being recorded, so. Only say good things.
Thank you. So I just wanted to give an update, come back and talk to the board about the early adopter for full Medicaid integration. That happened April 1st, and again, we're the only region, Clark and Skamania County, who has decided to go in this direction. And so we are working with the state agency called the Healthcare Authority, and they have selected two managed care organizations, so Molina Healthcare and Community Health Plan of Washington. And so they awarded the contracts. That work started, so we're like a little over 5 months in. Mary has a report that she can share with us much more lengthier about what the implementation looked like. And overall, what I want to say is that it went fairly smooth. Right. Nobody was dropped from care. The people that were receiving the assistance did not see a big change, which was good. And so what we're working on now, which I want to talk to you about, one of the projects we're working on is, you know, early adopter, the first couple months was about implementation, so moving to a different purchasing model. Now we're starting to work on the clinical integration part of it, which was the big intent of it, is how do we integrate these health, the healthcare system, so that people can be seen as whole health. It's not, you know, perfect. It doesn't include dental, and it doesn't include long-term care at this point. That will happen in 2020. We do have some other regions that are interested in going in this direction. So I have been informed today that Grant County and Chelan Douglas are looking at doing the same work in 2018. And they're potentially, I think Pierce County is having some conversation with their providers about whether they should also go before 2020. But come January of 2020, the entire state's going to be doing this. So we're the trendsetters, and we've kind of helped set the direction, and we're kind of fixing, I guess you could say, the systems, so when the rest of the state does it, they have already ironed out quite a bit of the different issues. So what's happened from this is some good planning has happened. And some things that I want to talk to you about today is one of the planning initiatives that have spun out of this. But we have created a regional behavioral planning council because the managed care organizations have 18 months to actually turn in a plan for how they plan to clinically integrate their systems. So they've decided that they'd like to create a start off with behavioral health, mental health, and substance use disorder, because those are the biggest changes to the system, and those are the most segregated right now of the different treatments. So they are, you know, the treatment providers are working as part of this regional behavioral health planning council. The counties are a part of it. I'm a part of it. We're working with also representatives from the housing homeless. We also have consumer representatives and the managed care organizations. And we meet monthly, and we're trying to come up with various projects. Today I want to talk to you a little bit, just to show you a little bit about what we're doing and jointly how our region has come together quickly to do these kinds of projects. So this is something that I did a community meeting back on August 11th. And so I'm going to start with Let's Begin, so you just can get a sense of, give you an overview. Uh-oh, is this not working? Did it turn on?
Okay.
Let's do, it's going to be like a little graphic. Go ahead and hit it. And then get to the next slide. So basically, how this fund was, you know, NAMI, and I'm pretty sure many of you have heard NAMI, about NAMI, they actually sponsored a public forum back in April, and they wanted to kind of discuss kind of what happened during the legislative session. And there were some things that we were hoping that we could have happened in our region that didn't happen. So we were able to bring together the delegation from Southwest Washington, so senators and representatives, particularly Senator Rivers and Senator Cleveland, Representative Harris and Representative Wiley, along with Clark County Chair Mark Bolt and Skamania County Commissioner Chris Brown. And from that, the community, and it was a big turnout. We had a huge turnout. And basically what they wanted to do was, let's try to come together as a region and come up with a legislative proposal to look at how can we support early adopter and strengthen our behavioral health programs. I was asked to facilitate that community process. And so what we did, go to the next slide for me. Thank you. So what we did was create a work group to basically, we're still working on this work group now, but what we're trying to do is create a legislative proposal that will go into the governor's budget, and I'll get a little bit more into it. But these are members of the people that were actually participating in this process. And we tried to keep the group around 15 people, but make sure that we had well-rounded representation so that we could get our tasks on. This group met weekly, and I would say they put in an enormous amount of work in a very short amount of time. So let's go to the next slide. The next slide. Judy.
Sorry.
So we started meeting in June, and we basically broke out into different groups. So we had someone focus on budget, clinical, and facilities. And what we did was did some research. And this group came together very quickly, and what they wanted to do was create what they call a crisis triage and stabilization center. So there is a project in Portland that will open up in January called the Unity Center. I don't know if any of you have heard of that. Legacy is leading it, but that partnership with Providence and OHSU. There's actually one up north in Snohomish County, and then there was one in California. So we did some research to say, what does those look like? And basically, what those are kind of centers where the police, families, people themselves, providers, healthcare providers can actually, when people have behavioral health issues, mental health and substance use disorder, can actually take them, and there may be some crisis stabilization beds, there may be some triage services, it's referrals back to the outpatient services. So that's why they wanted to do that. We actually had some conversations with law enforcement. They were both the City of Vancouver and the Sheriff's Department and the jails. Both hospitals, Legacy and Peace Health, were involved, and we're in conversation with the governor's office to make sure that we were doing what we need to do correctly to submit a legislative proposal. We're going to do a capital request, and we looked at four different locations in Southwest Washington, but we needed to make sure that it was an easy access for Skamania County. So lots of work has been done in the months of June and July, and also as well, we're just now kind of finishing up the work in August and September. We should be done by the end of September. These are the key principles and core values that they wanted to make sure that were incorporated in our crisis triage project. So make sure the biggest goal is decrease inpatient emergency department utilization. We do not think it was okay that people are sent to the emergency rooms as the access point to that. That's very traumatizing to people. The other thing is to improve care coordination between behavioral health and primary care. Again, the whole thing about early adopter is to look at integrating care, to look at the whole person. So that's the goal we want to try. So we want to make sure that the primary care side and all the specialty care is also considered with the behavioral health. We also want to make sure that people are this reduced jail bookings. A lot of times the police, if they don't have no place to put them and they're committed a crime, they will go to jail. And so we want to stop that. We want to be able to have some place. A lot of our police officers are getting trained in the crisis intervention training, so they're getting more aware of the behavioral health issues, but we need a place for them to be able to take them. We also want to increase stabilization services. We have very little of that in this community across the state, but we call them crisis stabilization beds, where people can stay up to no more than 7 days. We only have four of those beds in this entire region. So as you can imagine, there's not a lot of places to send people. And then also keep people in the community versus going to hospitals like Western State Hospital or having to go out of the region. And then the target population, again, is residents, people who live in Clark and Skamania County, anybody experienced behavioral health crisis, and mostly because of the way the rules are, it's going to be adult focused, but we're going to try to do some mobile crisis services for the youth, which doesn't really exist at this time. So. It's very limited. This is the Crisis Stabilization Center, and again, lots of conversations about what services will actually be there. So one of the things we talked about, again, is crisis stabilization beds. There's some conversation about having some detox beds there as well. Make sure there's strong triage referral services to outpatient treatment. Have our outreach and engagement model there. So we have outreach workers to make sure that they are located there. Strong focus on peer services and recovery oriented. And again, this is to be brief in it. This is not to be an inpatient hospital thing. So that's not what this is. And make sure we focus on resiliency. So again, this is to be about recovery and it's about stabilization. So we wanted to make sure that that is the focus for this center. So the next steps is we're in the process of our legislative proposal. We're going to ask for some planning dollars. And we are going to try to use those dollars, and we're going to put that in the governor's budget for next legislative session. If we're successful, we'll get it in the fall of 2017. And that's to help us find the right location. And so that's what the planning, and also the right design. Then our goal is also to do more formal planning, to start looking at what kind of services should be designed, the actual architectural design of the location, and then look at some other kind of support, in-kind support, financial support from the foundations, managed care organizations, counties, private, all that. So need a lot of work to do. Our goal, if you can go to the next slide, our goal is we should have hopefully, and these are just lists of different funding we'll be looking at, hopefully we should have this available depending on the location 3 to 5 years. And that's ambitious because depending on if are you remodeling or are you building. And so that's what we're looking at, and we'll be trying to determine kind of what is the best fit for this. And we're looking at 3 potential locations. At this time, I can't mention them because the executives of those organizations are still yet doing some due diligence. And so we need to go through that process with them. But this is just, I think there's, that might be the last slide. This is just one of the projects that we're working on. We have some others around working with people with behavioral health issues and housing. So trying to get the housing authority to work with the behavioral health and look at some joint mental health housing. So that's another project we're working on. But this is exciting because in the past, we've never had these systems work like this before. They kind of were off in silos. So just the fact that we're trying to go in a different direction and kind of set the example for the rest of the state, and trying to do things and provide capacity in our region for services that are lacking, it's just with the money being integrated, it's just easier to do it without all of the barriers, whether it's the rules or the contracts or the different strings attached to the money. That's all been eliminated too with the money being integrated and going to the managed care organizations. So it also allows the county to have more flexibility with our local funds, where before we were having to pay for services when there were gaps, when the state didn't give us enough money. Now we can actually be creative and help to pay for services that we've been wanting to pay for that we just haven't had been able to do. So I just wanted to give you guys an update. Much more work to do. We've got lots more to do this, but we're doing our best to educate the rest of the state as like I'm going to be in a conference on Friday up in Snohomish County. And so that region up there is putting a healthcare conference and they want to learn about what we're doing. So I'll be up there talking to them. But I just wanted to share with you guys, and I'm going around just talking to anybody, one who wants to know how we're doing with this important change in our community.
Yeah. I understand that one of the reasons this NAMI sponsored this was because the state had all this money and there were no proposals, so they just took all the money back. Is that right? So is this?
No, so what happened was, and that was just a learning lesson. So Southwest Behavioral Health had reserves. Every RSN kept reserves. And Southwest Behavioral Health had about 30 million reserves. And we worked with the governor in the House to try to get half that money back. And so we were hoping we could get it back to do stuff like this. And what happened is we had a breakdown in communication in the Senate, particularly with the budget staff. And they felt like, they didn't want to, kind of set a direction that would help hurt them in the future without completely understanding completely what we were doing. We realized we need to educate our legislative members much better because they voted for this legislation, but they didn't understand what it meant. So when we were trying to get the money back and help them understand the changes, it was a little too late. So we only got $1.5 million back, and they put it towards crisis services, and that's not helping us. So I think after NAMI did that public forum and they realized, wow, this is important, they're the ones who encouraged us to do this legislative proposal to get some of the money back. So what we're teaching other regions is educate your legislators and help them understand you need some of those reserves back.
So will they get money back or will they just get money in the future?
So we will actually, so that the reserves is gone. It went back into the coffer. DSHS has done what they need to do. They probably used some of the funds to help with plug the hole for other shortfalls. We're going to be asking for funds going forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Darlene has a question.
I have a question, I'm sorry. So currently, since we've made this change after April 1st, there's not enough providers in the community, so individuals are really struggling to either be able to find an open provider that's connected with their network. How is this going to address that in any way, or?
So what I'm doing now is we have an early warning system group, and I'm part of that, which is looking at implementation. And so what I would say is if you have somebody that is a primary care or behavioral health?
Behavioral health.
So behavioral health, we have 15 providers. They just added another one. And so we should, all of the providers should be taking people and should and are looking for people, because I've just spoken to some of them and they are begging for clients. So people with behavioral health should have access. Now, certain services will be hard to get into because they're limited, such as detox, residential inpatient, but for regular outpatient, people should be able to get in.
So like how now we have to go through Melina, right? Or whoever.
Or Camina Butler.
Right, or whoever. But Melina is the one that I've been struggling with families. And their providers are full. They're not taking these new people. You can go through everybody on the list and it's like, okay.
Children?
Adults.
Yeah, you and I should talk because I know Columbia River's taking people, I know Lifeline's taking people, I know if it's CV, ChangePoint's taking people.
Okay.
So all the providers have made comments to the healthcare authority, they're looking for clients. So,
thank you.
Now if it's a specialized service like a PAC team or something, that might be different. But for regular outpatient, you should be able to find outpatient providers.
Okay.
Now the primary care side is a challenge.
Yeah, and actually I haven't heard that as an issue.
Okay.
So.
But if you do, I'd like to know because we're trying to get the health plans to expand their access to primary care. And so Molina's done a good job. They're in Portland, they're in Cowlitz, they're in Clickitat, they're Skamania, they're in Clark. But we're trying to work with Community Health Plan of Washington to do the same.
Okay.
So. Other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So the crisis triage model, you know, it said you were talking about how they'd be doing outpatient or referral back to outpatient services. So,
or other type of specialty.
Okay, for whatever the person needs,
yes.
Right at that time of crisis. And so, I mean, I guess I'm hearing. I guess that's kind of an answer to my question: is that do we have adequate capacity for outpatient services in our community?
I'm here for mental health, yes.
Uh-huh.
And we've got 7 chemical, that's more than most regions have.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So this is the first time I'm hearing people can't get into behavioral health. Now, if they say inpatient chemical dependency, yes, I can see that. Because Lifeline's the only one doing it. If it's detox, yes, Lifeline's. But for outpatient, you're the first person that's brought to my attention.
And I've heard from several different families.
Now, they may not like a particular provider, they may want a specific provider, and that provider may be full, that's a different story, but there are a number of providers that are telling the counties and health authority that we're ready to take clients. Yeah.
One other question.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, one of the problems that we're currently having is a lot of our DD clients, when they have an emotional breakdown, are ending up in ER in for 3, 4, 5, 29 days,
mm-hmm.
period of time. Is this going to address that group of clients as well, even though it's really a lack on the DD services more than the mental health services?
So that's gonna have to be a coordination between different systems. So the crisis triage is meant for, like if you don't know where the services are or you're having a bit of a crisis, and that's defined differently for different people, you can come here and then assessment. There will be some RNs there will be mental health professionals, peers, who can help assess. They're gonna have to be some coordination between housing, homeless, and developmental and other systems, long-term care, to put them back into the right services. So we realize that has to be a component of this, but right now, we don't have this one place for people to go, so people are on their own trying to call around and figure out. So at least this is a start to help address some of those things. But those, we know as part of the bigger clinical integration, all those systems have to be educated on each other, so.
Is this, Darla, mostly people who experience autism?
Frequently, and frequently the mental health actually isn't a true mental health, and it needs to be dealt with behavior modifications and environmental modifications and training of residential staff, which we're having such turnover, mm-hmm. right? So there's this huge, bigger crisis issue that's occurring. I mean, I think residential right now, we're looking at about 52% turnover rate. Okay. And so we can't even begin to get staff trained. Okay. So of course people are having behaviors, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and so it's like where those, so what's happening is a lot of those individuals are ending up going through the mental health doors.
Yeah.
Right, even though yep. it's a different service model and it's completely different than what they may be needing, but it's at least a door where they can access.
Yeah,
yeah.
Patrick.
I do have a question. Mm-hmm. I need to also ask, okay, there are people with mental health issues that go into like short-term placement and then they come out mm-hmm. and then they're released back to the street and they still have that mental illness, and instead of helping them make it better, it just seems to make things worse. Because I know of an instance where my nephew called me and he said he had a friend of his that was very suicidal, that was just released from a place because he lost his wife mm-hmm. due to something tragic that happened, and he said that his friend was talking about killing himself mm-hmm. and he's like, he turned to the hospital and they just said, you know, you're fine, we don't have anything that we can help you with that can make things better to mm-hmm. help you mm-hmm. and I think that with something like that, I think instead of the street, I'd like to see something more, mm-hmm. more of a resolution to be able to help people more like that. Because that is an ongoing common problem, mm-hmm. more than not. And I hear that a lot from different people, because a lot of people approach me and they're like, what do? We have no answers. Mm-hmm. What are we supposed to do? You know.
So that this will help with that. But one piece I need people to understand is, this isn't going to solve everything
no.
because Medicare has really poor benefits for all kinds of services. They don't pay the providers enough, and a lot of providers won't take Medicare. And private insurance has really bad coverage for mental health. They don't even cover crisis stabilization. Mm-hmm. And for like chemical dependency, it's only like 20 days. So if people have private insurance or Medicare, they can come here, but we're going to have the same problem because we can't get them back into the med-level services. Right. And so it's almost like for people that are on Active Health Medicaid, they have better coverage than some of these other plans. So that part of that is not going to get solved, but at least there's some place they can go and maybe they can get some meds for a while or something, or some kind of referrals to the best they can. But right now we just don't have that. So
it should help, it's like, it's not a fix everything, but it will help your nephew's situation.
When other people, like I said, have approached me with the same issues, they're like, we're at our boiling point, we don't know what to do. We've gone every resource, we've exhausted everything we can think of. Mm-hmm. What else is there for us to do? Because there's nowhere for them to go, or there's nothing out there for them. A lot of the times, the sad, honest truth is, the only place that's really there is the street. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't be an answer for people. That should not be an answer.
Now, I would say in our community, but it'll be a statewide facility. So there's this organization called Springstone, mm-hmm. and they're going to build a 72-bed, I want to say, up in Salmon Creek. And the whole point is to do private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. And so they're going to be there for people with mental health and also substance abuse disorder. So that's a service that is coming to our community, but just know that they're going to go statewide, so it's probably going to get used fast. But we don't have that now. So that's something positive, but they came here because we're doing early adopters. So they wanted to be able to put their foot down. So as far as trying to provide some co-occurring services and make sure that they can be rooted in Washington, they may do some services elsewhere. So that's a resource coming as well. So once that happens, I think in 2 or 3 years, I think hopefully they'll be able to have that. That's also available too.
It's good
to
know.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yes.
I just want to say I think this is very excellent, and I think it might be nice if the board, if not at this time, at least should plan on making some kind of accommodation to those that are doing the work for this.
I think you have to say that Vanessa has brought the vision together and had the will to drive it forward. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can do that. We can do a commendation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
Okay, we make her come again then, right?
Any other questions?
Thank you.
And then you'll have to let us know who you want it to be in front of. Always a good thing. PR never hurts.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's continue your education process.
And I will be back once we have some more information to share. Thank you.
Thank you. So we thank those in the community who waited and were patiently. And now, is there any input from the community here? Anyone? Darla, you're on the agenda, but are you here as a community member?
I am a community member too. I just wanted to, because this is separate than what's on the agenda. Our candidates forum, and I ran out of the office without the flyers, but our candidates forum is October the 25th. It's at Geyser Hall at Clark College. From networking starts from 6 to 6:30, and the program will be from 6:30 to 8:30. And we hope to see you all there so we can address all the issues.
What day was that again?
October the 25th.
Thank you.
It's the Tuesday after ballots. So you should receive your ballot that day or the day before, so you can come here with the legislator, the candidates have to say, in case you're curious on how to vote.
So that's the one at the end of Mill Plain, then?
Oh, it's real close to here.
Right. Yeah.
Clark College.
Up here.
Yeah, Clark College.
Not where it was last time.
No, no, it's here at Geyser Hall at the Clark College campus. Thank you for asking.
Time again?
6 for networking. There will be some light refreshments, music. It'll be lovely and a wonderful time to connect with your candidates.
Who all is invited?
And all the candidates for the 14th, 17th, 18th, 49th, and 20th districts.
Is that all Clark County?
That's all Clark County, yes. So those are all the legislative candidates. And we also have invited some of the other candidates, but we haven't got confirmation yet, so we will see.
You did an excellent job of facilitating last time, but we thought that some of the candidates really didn't, they weren't primed as to what they should say. Are you going to be doing that this time?
You know, I try to do that every time.
I know you try.
To the best of their ability, to the best of my ability, we provide a notebook for them 3 weeks ahead of time, and I make myself readily available for a one-on-one to educate them on DD 101, so that they have that information going forward and coming in, so they can speak in an educated manner to their constituents. And whether or not they take me up on that is an individual choice.
They either read it or they don't, and then you
or they call or they don't. And I'm happy to sit down with each of them.
And we thank you for all the work you do for them.
Thank you
for them. Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, then I think the next on the agenda is Judy Miller, who's going to be speaking to us.
Thank you. I'll come stand
about the individual and family service waiver.
Yeah. So thank you so much for letting me come and talk with you guys today. With DDA in 2014, we had the Senate pass a substitute bill that directed us to change our individual and family services state-only program, so the program that was solely funded by our state dollars, into a waiver program. I am the social and health program coordinator for our waiver programs within Developmental Disabilities Administration, and I do that for our entire region, which spans to Tacoma, Port Angeles, to Vancouver, COSO. There's 11 offices within our region within DBA. The direction for us to go into a waiver allowed for us to expand the number of individuals that we can serve. So we get a federal match when we move a program from state only to a waiver program, and it's a 50-50 match from the federal government. So we want to let and get the word out and have capacity on our waiver program. And individual and family services is directed to families, individuals who live in their family home, so relatives' home. And really the intent behind it is to keep that family unit stable so that individuals can continue to stay there, maintain their home. Individuals have to be ages 3 or older. They have to be eligible with Developmental Disabilities Administration. And then they have to want to receive services. So really the intent behind us changing to a waiver was to reach out to those people that aren't currently receiving service. So those people on our services request line is what it's called now, formerly No Kid Services. Really reaching out to those individuals and helping them access this program. some of the exciting new things that are available on our individual and family services waiver is peer mentoring is a new service that isn't available on any of our other waiver programs, and there are 5 waiver programs within developmental disabilities. So peer mentoring is really about mentoring families and the individual who is a client with things that are needed, someone that's gone through a similar experience. So it's either a family member, the provider would be a family member that is related to someone with a developmental disability, or an individual with a developmental disability themselves that would provide that support going through a similar experience. It could be assisting through an IEP plan. It could be assisting somebody through the Social Security process. It could be assisting somebody to go out in the community and learn about relationships and asking somebody out, going to a dance, that kind of thing. Another service that's really exciting is the community engagement service that is new to our individual and family services waiver. And really, it's just as it sounds, going out in the community and accessing places that the individual wants to go, finding resources, or not, just going and finding things that they want to engage with new people. We also have supported parenting, which is a program that is for our client or the individual that's eligible with us to receive support because they are a parent or an expectant parent. So it's about that critical parenting education. So that's a new service that's available. That's really exciting. So we have those waiver services available, as well as our respite, which is a service that a lot of families need. So great in caring for the individuals that they're serving and supporting. So we want to make sure we're getting the word out. We want to reach our capacity of 6,500 statewide on this waiver. Currently, we statewide are just over 2,500. So we moved the first portion of our outreach was to the people that are currently receiving state-only funding, so state-only individual and family services, and transferring those people who are eligible onto our waiver program to access that service. When someone moves onto a waiver program within developmental disabilities, they're then entitled to Medicaid, so which entitles them to other services within DDA. So moving those individuals, and now we're on the outreach portion. So outreaching to anyone who's a client or who is not a client currently but is interested, they could become eligible and then look at individual and family services as a waiver program. Yes?
You said a minimum age is 3. Is there a maximum age?
No.
This can't be on another waiver.
Right? Correct.
It's 115.
But if
we have 5 waivers within developmental disabilities, so you can only be on one of them at one time. So we have our core waiver, our children's intensive and home behavioral supports, our individual and family services, our basic plus waiver, and our community protection waiver.
So this is an unusual opportunity for people who are unserved to get into service, especially I'm thinking those kids in school who are getting hooked. I mean, because once you're in, you can do some things and then end up in the basic plus, getting a job and having a life. But it's unusual that DDA is, in fact, this is the first time since 1976 that they've outreached.
Right. Yeah, once, like you were talking about, once an individual is on a home and community waiver with DDA, they have a priority for another waiver program if the current one doesn't meet their needs. So, yeah, it's a really good opportunity for individuals that aren't currently receiving a service. Although, if individuals are receiving a service and want to access individual and family services waiver, they can do that, requesting that through their case manager.
Well, I think, if they don't fill those 6,500 waivers, they're not going to hang around.
Right.
These have to be used by February, and they will go away to the general fund.
We have to show at the end of February that we have assessed those individuals too, and we have identified those individuals that would potentially go on to individual and family services waiver. They don't have to be completely through the process, but we have to demonstrate to the legislature that we're going to meet that number by the end of June.
So are you outreaching to schools?
Yes, we're doing lots of outreach all over.
Take some?
Yes.
Sure.
Do you have packets?
I did. Yeah.
Okay, because I have some upstairs, but I gave Vancouver 20. But if you could give him for Evergreen.
Yes. We also, online, on
the Head Start
DDA internet page, there's now a new link that people can just go on and request a service. So that's kind of a new way that individuals can get on and families can get on to request through the internet, and it's kind of a quicker process than leaving a message on our request line, which, yes.
Sorry, will you send me that link and yeah. then we can get it to the advisory board and do
And the only way I knew to connect with DDD was Darla came to my son's, at the time, preschool to ECC, the early childhood program in the Evergreen School District. So this was like, I think he was like 3 or 4 and he's 16 now. So otherwise I would have never been connected with DDD. And, I'm wondering, what happens to, are you seeing the state-only dollars going to dry up because I'm a rogue mom, pushed my child like nobody's business to have a normal life and do things, and because of his own motivation and me and my husband pushing him, he does things that we never knew he could do. He's still developmentally disabled. Absolutely. Get some really wild ideas that are far-fetched that I sometimes don't see coming, or, you know, he still is. But, and he's a teenager, so you lay all the hormones and teen angst on top of the DD. But at any rate, so he wasn't eligible for the waiver. So he's still on state. And this was my fear as I pushed him like hell all of these years. He will fall through the cracks. It has always been my fear. He may not be on footing to be able to compete with everybody else and then not get services he needs. It's always been, I've always worried about this, but I've always thought, we're just gonna do the best we can. We'll deal with it when we get there. So what happens then to all of the ones like left behind because they're not eligible for the waiver and these services? What's, are these state-only dollars gonna dry up for them?
So currently with individuals that were on the IFS state-only program, if they're not meeting eligibility for the waiver, we're maintaining them on their state-only program for now. Region-wide, we have about 21 individuals. So the intent is to keep them in that place. So there's 4 criteria that would keep someone on IFS state funded. And that would be if they don't meet the intermediate care facility for individuals with intellectual disabilities. So that's part of our assessment piece. So if they don't meet that, if they're not a citizen, if they don't meet the financial eligibility for long-term care, and then if they don't meet the disability determination for Social Security. So they will maintain our state-only funding core at this moment. And I can't, I don't know what's going to happen future-wise, yeah. but they will stay on state-only currently.
But we can work with that,
yeah.
Yeah,
I'll work with that. I'll be in touch.
Well, they move to 907 Harmony.
Oh, okay.
You can have coffee if you're across the parking lot.
I actually go out my back door over there.
I've already been
to their office. He has a case manager now. He gets state-only dollars. But so as the years go by, we'll see, because he's headed for adulthood. But I would really suggest the schools and special ed. That's a really key place because, you know, even being a lawyer, even being a sophisticated parent, it wasn't until Darla came for the Parent Coalition to ECC and did a presentation that I even knew the letters, didn't know state, local, didn't know anything. And so I think special ed is key for outreach. Can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, we're definitely doing outreach to the schools. We're doing outreach even to physicians in the community. We're doing outreach to our early intervention. We're doing outreach everywhere that we can. There's actually news articles that are coming out. Internet, Facebook. Yeah.
There's all kinds of parent groups on Facebook, too.
Yes.
Tons of them.
20, if you've got them. Otherwise, we'll go up and get them.
Darla.
One question and then just a comment.
for you to hopefully carry somewhere. And so it's not really a comment for you, but
yeah.
Okay. So question is, with the peer mentoring, the community engagement, supportive parenting, how are we doing on recruiting providers?
So we have just hired within our region 3 resource developers on to up our provider numbers. So they're still pretty low. Peer mentoring, we have 4 agencies contracted at this time, and that's statewide. Within our region, we have 2. For community engagement, we have 13, and within our region, we have 6. And they're throughout kind of the lower area of our region. And for supported parenting, we have 2. I also forgot to mention person-centered plan facilitation, which is a new service on IFS Waiver. And we have 3 agencies currently. So any providers that you guys know, professional contracts for the person-centered facilitation. So any providers also send them our way.
Well, the school people, we have the number that want to do that, not full-time, teachers, but they've been trained up.
Absolutely.
And so we need to circle back to the people in our planning grant who raised their hand so that you have them.
And I know there's a couple people that are in process as well. Yeah.
And then the comment just for you, one of the things that we're seeing in Region 3 South that doesn't appear to be happening in other regions is we're having a harder time getting families through the eligibility process, families where the individual should be eligible. So whether it's an issue with paperwork, issue with communication, there's multitudes of different things, but there is some kind of a stumbling block going on there. And so we've been working with our eligibility team. So I just, as we look at recruitment, it's just not recruitment. We need to work on that other piece as well.
Absolutely. Have you noticed that change? Can you tell me, like, time frame wise?
In the last, Mary, how long has it been? Maybe a year and a half?
What?
The eligibility?
Beth Crable came down and brought Barbara.
About a year ago.
Zeller now.
and she said, because we noticed that statewide, the eligibility in our regions was significantly different in a not good way, and we were trying to figure out what's going on. Because the whole idea was to standardize it, and I hate that they pulled it out of
class. That's what I was wondering, is it since the move of
Okay. And we've worked with central office, and we've been on conference calls with Chris, and not, well, both Chris's, but Chris Peterson. So, I mean, you know, and there are the communication, it's easier for me to find answers for families, but we're still seeing some stumbling blocks there. So I just, as we do outreach, want to circle back around and say that'll
be a barrier issue.
Otherwise, it'll feel like a setup.
Yeah.
And then they'll be mad at you, and you don't want that.
No, absolutely. That's going to be a barrier, too.
And the people appear to be trying really hard, so I'm not sure what the hang-up is, but...
What is the region when you're saying, you know, the providers in the region, and what does the region encompass?
So all the way up to Tacoma, out to Port Angeles, down to Vancouver, Shelton and Centralia, South Bend.
Peninsula.
So there's a certain number of providers. It's not necessarily local, even though it's in our region. It could be very far away. Okay.
Yes.
The regions were a decision by the legislature, theoretically, to save money, but I don't think that those ever come about the way that people think, because you still need to have staff to man something. So you only have one person call the boss, but you have at least as many total FTEs. It's kind of funky. So the regions, for example, one region is the entire eastern part of Washington, from the mountains over, is one region.
Oh, yeah. So we moved from 6 regions to 3 regions. So that's why we're big.
And why eligibility is a distance away now, which right. makes it really hard for them.
It's housed out of our Tacoma office now and centralized there. I will have these available for everyone. If you can pass them around. I'm going to put the service request line on here and our local office number. I realize it wasn't on here, so I'm going to put those on before I give them out. And then I'll give you the packet.
Do you have a packet?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
I do have packets as well. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, I don't know, let's go with Darla first.
Yeah, okay. We're
gonna, yeah, Darla.
Oh, okay.
We'll get all the needy stuff out.
Okay, well.
For the legislative agenda.
Who didn't
this is your legislative agenda, right?
I did bring copies of some draft issues that the Parent Coalition is looking at.
These are old ones, so you know.
Very similar. So you have some of that stuff going forward. Sit up here.
Oh, sure. So I feel. And this is
the CA. I also have some draft legislation from a state level if we need it. I just gave them this. And I didn't print a ton. This is theirs. What is being handed out from the Parent Coalition is not our legislative agenda. It's issues that we've identified that we're looking at to potentially be on our legislative agenda. We don't want more than about 3 or 4 issues maximum on our agenda. I will tell you, for Parent Coalition, and I believe for statewide Parent Coalition as well, the workforce shortage is going to be one of the number one issues because that's affecting everything. Services are amazing, but if you have no providers to do them, you know, for the first time we're in a position where families have dollars, they have money, we can get people on DDA, but we have no providers to do the work. And so, or if they get a provider, they're getting served by somebody who maybe doesn't speak the native language of the person. There's all kinds of barriers and issues there. And then it's creating huge crisis situations in residential with the extreme turnover rate. So those two issues are going to rise to the top. An issue that there's a lot of discussion about on a state level is wanting to set it up to where under day program services, two services can be accessed instead of one. And while I'm going to give you my personal opinion on that. I think that is a great idea legislatively. I don't think we're in a budget scenario for that to happen. It doesn't mean we don't work on it, but there's actually some laws already in place, a service already identified that's on every waiver that has a loose enough definition in the law that we could tweak it to do what we want, that's in aggregated services that we could use to make it look like community engagement so we could actually already be serving people. Yes, it's going to create a bow wave for DDA. We'll have to deal with that in the future. So I think while, yes, we work on having two services available, I don't think that's going to happen this year. It's just there's no money, right? But if that's something that we need, I think we can find workarounds. And it be maybe coming from a situation that's a little more appropriate as far as what they really want is community engagement, not community involvement. Okay, I said that wrong. They want community involvement and community engagement, not employment stuff, so maybe it needs to be coming from a different location outside of day program services, if I said all that right.
You know, it's kind of interesting, there's a waiting list of 10,000 people with disabilities, right? And there's a lack of money, and yet there's services that they're trying to sell, and no one's picking them up.
Families are
how does that work? Where's the disconnect?
Families are trying. I think you guys are having a hard time getting, because the waiting list has been on for so long They're having a hard time, families move, and because they've been on a waiting list, they don't necessarily turn in a change of address. So each month, I know DDA is putting out how many families they've been able to contact, how many have applied, how many have said, no, we're not interested at this time, how many they've reached out to and cannot locate.
So you've gotten on a list, but people aren't responding.
Yeah, we're going down a list of individuals and connecting and doing a little sleuthing to figure out if people have moved, can we find an address, can we find a phone number to connect, but yeah.
Too bad agencies can't connect, like too bad DDD can't connect with like DSHS or...
But they are DSHS.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, you are DSHS.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. It was a division of DSHS.
Yeah. Yes. So they can connect.
So that's probably, yeah.
But they can't connect with post office.
Well,
if somebody doesn't get something, then they would not know.
Yeah, so we'll try to go connect with Social Security, we'll try to connect with CSO, and different avenues to see.
Up all your tools.
Yes. And post office is only forwarding mail for a shorter period of time now than what they used to do. And I don't know, I've moved a lot recently, so I know this to be a fact. I don't know why or when it happened. But it's just a few months now versus it used to be like for a year, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one piece of paper we don't have in front of us here. We did a survey of what the public wants as the legislative agenda, right?
No, it was for what they wanted the board to work out for their plan.
Yeah, but shouldn't that be something that we then pass on to the legislative as part of the legislative agenda or not?
We can do that. I can go upstairs and get it.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, if the public is voting for this, then the legislature should know that, right?
The public voter of employment came out first again. Transition came out second.
Remember what was third, Trish?
Do not remember what was third.
For what? I'm sorry.
In that survey when we did the public input for
transition,
the plan.
Transition
was second.
What was third? You remember?
Isn't it in order on the plan?
Yeah, but I don't have one.
Yeah.
Is it posted online?
Oh. Maybe today it is.
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
So
you
tried.
Sorry.
He was working on it.
Okay. Call Trudy. If Trudy's still there, but have her bring down a plan. Because
that would be something that would give a little bit of heft to our demand if we actually had public support of a particular agenda, right? Mm-hmm. I know that's why we got the plan that way, but I thought we discussed also making that part of our agenda as well. Do you remember that discussion or not?
I think that you all talked about that at the work session.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So here's our comprehensive plan, 2016 to 2020, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think we had community access or community information in there as number one, and that was not number one in votes by the community. It was employment transition and then
community information.
Well,
memory.
Our long-term. Are you talking about our long-term priorities?
Yeah.
Community information and advocacy, employment, and transitioning high school students. Okay. Next is transportation, housing, recreation, leisure.
Babies.
Early intervention, aging issues, and healthcare.
What was the number one?
Community information and advocacy.
Was what Judy's talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the way 10 people voted.
Yeah, I mean, I was just wondering what people think. I think it gives credibility to our request if we have some public input on there, right?
Well, this year there will not be, there will not be dollars for transition if you don't put that in. Kids coming out of school will get nothing next year.
One of the things that there's been a lot of discussion about is how can we get transition services permanently on the caseload forecast. Mm-hmm. When Senator Zarelli was an acting senator, a sitting senator, he put it on the forecast as a courtesy vote. And what we didn't realize was that that was only for a set period of years, and then that went away. So now we no longer even have a courtesy vote.
Yeah.
for transition services.
That is just critical. I mean, yeah. The whole thing is follow car. Because you're going to have two independent systems that aren't going to work together.
Oh, education and the health.
And then I think the transition is huge, but I also look, since, I mean, in the last year is housing. I mean, it's got to come up higher than it was.
Oh, I agree.
To me, just observing.
Especially in this market.
Yeah.
So high demand, housing is definitely a high demand.
So, but I would say transition has got to be.
Mm-hmm. That's in my home too. You do everything for the student up to a certain age, and then you drop them.
Yeah. Have a good life, you know. It's not going to work.
Yeah. 21 years out of what, 80, 90?
Yeah.
That's why it's been on our agenda every year. Uh-huh. It's employment and transition.
Transition, employment, and housing to me are the. I mean, and those are the things that we voted on, and they may not be in the same order that we have, but I think that things have changed since we've done that survey.
I can wordsmith them if you come up with them.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think to reflect more what the public wants, I think we should start with employment and transition, and then the next one is housing. Okay. Just put them in that order there.
I think it's a good time to, you know, create awareness about housing, because so much is going on with housing as a community, with, you know, this new tax on the ballot coming up, and, you know, all the attention to homelessness and funds for housing.
Well, and one of the things that rarely gets talked about is most individuals who experience disabilities that are adults would be homeless without their family taking them in, right? And we don't count them in our homeless count, but the reality is most of them, you know, we have 92,000 individuals in the state who experience an intellectual or developmental disability, and we have about 5,000 in some type of a residential setting, right? So that leaves, what, 87,000 individuals? Now, not all of those are adults.
Can you repeat that first sentence for the record?
There's...
Are you sure there's not that
many? 92,000?
Yeah.
They're not on the DD caseload, but
right.
Statewide.
How many are on the DD caseload?
DD caseload is 42,000,
and how
roughly.
Many
and there's 5,000. Right. Yeah.
I can relate to that because my father, I was living in an apartment on my own with supports with intellectual disability. I had to recently have my father help me to get my own place, because if it wasn't for that, I would have been one of those people that would have actually been homeless at that point. So my father, him and my mother got together and decided that I needed to have something of my own before they passed. So I now have my own home.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you do. There is some draft legislation going forward. That talks about enhanced adult family homes specialized for individuals with developmental disabilities. One of the models that we're looking at is if we've got this huge issue with providers, right? We have such a huge turnover in providers, and there's not enough workforce, and the wage is so low. Can we look at a way where we could do a shared living model where part of the payment would actually be a place to live for the provider, right? So that's more of a live-in model, so that it beefs up the benefits to the provider while addressing some of the homelessness issues and stuff that's going on. So they're looking at some creative ways to do that on a state level. I brought community advocates. And I say that loosely because it might be this group over here and this group over here and not this group here. We've yet to, September next week is when we're actually getting together to try to hone our message as a solid message across the state. We've yet to do that. I did bring 3 copies of that draft legislation in case you guys wanted to look at it, though.
Do you have it electronically?
I do. I can forward it to you.
There's also a renewed, according to Amy Price, there's kind of a renewed interest in companion homes. We both acknowledge that they could be done a little different in some cases, but there is some renewed interest in that, which is another, it doesn't have to be the traditional residential program that we've looked at for 25 years, which just has changed names over the years, it can be something out of the box. Or more people now are living in our plan, more people live alone in their own house and apartment with minimal support than live in any other setting except for the family. More than any contracted, even when you add it all up. So it was stunning to see that.
One of the things that's a concern is in this housing market, some of those individuals that have been living in that type of a setting, that is now being jeopardized because of the drastic raise in rents.
That's what I was thinking. How do they afford to?
You can barely make it when you've got very little income. Yeah. It's almost impossible because it takes almost everything you have just to make, just to make ends meet. And you're lucky if you can eat or whatever. That just depends.
Mary, what was the term you used? Companion?
Companion. Yeah, companion homes. They kind of got started here when Sandy was, Silvera was doing some things. David Petoniak talks about them because they've been very successful in Vermont and Rhode Island. Some of the way they were approached here was a little different, and I think some of that was good, but they haven't had the support. I don't think they've had the intervention and support of case management that you would have in a resident supported living program, and they probably needed it. Mm-hmm. They probably needed a little more molding or requirements or interaction.
There's 58 of them across the state, and they actually provide a living wage to the provider and help with the housing issue, because there's that shared unit between the provider and the individual being supported. And in many cases, they end up being substantially less expensive than a typical residential model would be. So it actually saves the state money as well. Not always. It really is based, because the contract with the provider is negotiated based on the individual's needs. So that's, really individualized.
Disability piece for companion.
Well, and what we're finding with companion homes is about 10 to 12 years is the average.
Yeah. I want to share something else with you. I had someone that just recently attended one of the assisted adult living facilities, and she said that the environment that was there, it was a good setting, but she felt that it was inappropriate for her daughter for that being, because the only kind of life that the clients have in there is they sit around a television set, and really, there really isn't, they don't do much. They don't get out, they don't interact, do the socialize, do whatever. So she's like, if this is what these kind of places are, then why am I going to take my daughter and place her in a place where they're doing this? I want my daughter to be able to be independent, do as much as she can that she's able. And she's like, forget this. This isn't what I want for my child.
One thing that's very exciting about housing is it's only limited by our own imagination. And just as Sandy did with the companion home, and as Ted and Jacqueline have done with their family, and we can be creative. We can go, we can make requests from the legislature for as long as it takes for them to hear us and fund us. And, there's things that we can do to really impact that and make some changes. And that's exciting. I mean, it takes a long time and a lot of work, but it can be done.
Okay. Is there one resource that someone could go to if they were interested in starting something like that?
I would go to the housing coordinator at the ARC of Southwest Washington and to the housing group.
Is it Dindell's part of that?
We've missed you. Can I ask a question? These are the 2015 ones. What happened with those?
I don't have them in front of me, so
let's see. So the first one was maintain current level of funding for development initiative services.
We did that.
And next was services for young adults transitioning. So two of the same, I think, because the first one includes employment.
Right.
And then the third one, we had support for the DEL, the Department of Relearning.
We, all of those things were accomplished this last legislative session.
Yep. Good job, guys.
Yeah, Ronnie was number three there.
The only thing I, concern I had was that I am Dell and I didn't receive any of this
support. Oh. You didn't get some of those $5 million.
Well, when that comes through, come see me and I will help you with all kinds of unique, creative residential options.
So I think we've agreed that we should continue with this employment and with transition. What should we do number three?
Housing,
so do you want to put it housing? Do we want to put the workforce shortage? Do we want to put continue the DL? Is there some, because we should keep it short. That's what we say, keep it short, right?
I think if the housing fits with our plan better, because workforce, we can support things that other people put forward first.
I see housing just because it's been such a big thing and it's a crisis for everyone. Mm-hmm. And if it's a crisis for people that can sort of afford it on the margins, people that we're talking about are not going to be able to, and then they're going to lose the house.
And if so many of them live in their homes, and those people themselves lose their homes, that's a real problem, right?
So I would say housing. Yeah.
Okay, so do we have three then?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to send you out some verbiage around that, but you'll need a motion.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, does someone like, would like someone like to move that?
I'll move that for the, what do you call it?
2017
legislative session, that our priorities are credit card.
Employment.
Make sure you want to
usually
move.
Usually
employment, transition, and housing.
Very good.
I'll second that.
Okay.
And second, is there all in favor?
Aye.
And is there a suggestion that we let Mary write these and pass them on? Are you in favor of that as well?
I'll send it out to you.
I suggest that we let her support. And
I'll second that. All in favor? Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help with that, Darla, and thank you for everyone else. Okay. The next thing on our agenda then is the October event. Kristen in the back has a bunch of flyers. You remember it's October 19th. This is our, I don't know how many is this now?
This is the,
it's
a lot.
Sixteenth annual celebration of National Disability Employment Awareness Month. Yeah. So we'll be meeting at the Heathman Lodge again. Please take these with you as you go.
Yeah.
I'm going to set them by the sign-in sheet. So
give Helen some for DEL.
Helen already has some. Yeah.
Based on last year's attendance, we've asked for a bigger room.
Oh, yeah.
It would be great to fill that and even have a bigger one next year.
Right.
One exciting thing about this, there'll be more videos and fewer speeches.
So come on out.
And we have a great program planned, and it's going to be at the Heathman again. So please take your folders. Did you want me to say something else about it? And in that process, we have to get to there. All these the various cities have made proclamations supporting this. Mm-hmm. So we need to get members from our board to go visit those. So Mary,
and some people aren't here that usually go to these. So if you can sign up, if you can, it's okay. We'll see that it's covered.
This side of the table is signed up. We're waiting for
that.
No pressure.
They do want me to, all the cities want me to let them know who's coming. I don't know what they do if it was somebody they didn't like.
It doesn't take a long time to go there and you get to watch how their city government works. So you get to stand up and speak on our behalf. Just thank them. Mm-hmm. And then if you go with Mary, she'll buy you a beer.
Dad, I don't think so.
Erase that.
Yes.
Just kidding.
But especially if it's close to where you live.
Yeah.
No, that's what I suggest, is go to, if you can get to someplace close to where you live, because they like that too.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's really great. It's a great way to let them know what we do, and it's a great way to let them show their support for us. It's very, very encouraging, very, very, very promising. I'm speaking seriously now.
Richfield gave us a round of applause last year.
Oh, Richfield was great. Yeah.
Well, Washougal was the first time too, and they were all excited, and they came. They contacted Mary the very next day. The response was very quick and very positive.
Yeah, they were all right on it this time. They got right back.
And David spoke. Nelson David spoke too, and that was very, very effective.
Good job, David.
Thank you. Thank you.
So hopefully you'll come to the winds.
Yes, I am aiming and also I am also going to hand these out also for people for my work and see if they want it, and they want to, then good.
Excellent. Thank
Great.
You.
Thank you.
I have questions about that. It's really hard for me to kind of do those kind of things because my sister has a job. And in order for me to do that, I would have to make other alternative arrangements to stay.
Okay.
You don't have to do that one then, but can you come to this?
But please come to the event.
I'm sure.
I think we can get both of them.
Maybe we can. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you remind me, don't let me forget, I'll put that on my calendar at home, and I'll make sure that I highlight that.
Take the flyer, and if you need a ride home, I think we can figure that out too.
Yeah. Okay, because I live all the way up towards Woodland, so.
I go through Woodland on my way home.
You got it covered. All you have to do is get there.
That's doable, then. That's nice to know.
Okay, so take a pin and invite and put it on your calendar.
Okay. Is that it then? Anything else? I'm not going to forget Trish.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget me.
Agency update.
Yes. So I just wanted to mention again, I think that I had talked to the board previously about we are no longer contracting with SL Start, and I just wanted to give you an update about how that transition went. SL Start is no longer one of our employment agency contracts. They supported their customers to transition to new agencies. Both SL Start and the Developmental Disabilities Administration were critical in a smooth transition for our customers. Some of the things that we expected in that transition is that some people may decide to leave service, some people might go to community access. We had very few people that left service or decided to go to community access. There were a handful, but the remaining of the customers did go into employment services with other agencies. And we had more than enough capacity to serve all of those people that were previously served by SL Start. So just wanted to give you an update about how that went and kind
Fantastic.
Of close the loop on that.
Mm-hmm. Any new business? Then I think the last one is adjournment.
Yes.
There
will be no work session in October. We'll just do the event.
Okay.
So we have no work session.
You have an event instead.
You have an event.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
We'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you very, very much for your attendance and your participation.
Oh, perfect, Connie.